ever donated something expecting, like a huge return only for it all to just fall apart.
Oof. Yeah, I can imagine that wouldn't feel too good.
Well, that's kind of the story of Kenford v. Erie County.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that one.
This is like legendary New York case, all about contract law, broken promises, and a stadium that never got built.
Yeah, that's a classic.
And today we're going deep into this case
Oh, cool.
to see why it's still so relevant,
Right.
for anyone who's dealing with big deals, especially in real estate.
For sure, especially real estate. It really highlights that like fine line, between having those like legitimate expectations versus what the law considers an uninsurable business risk.
Oh,
The
interesting.
kind of risk that's just way too uncertain
Okay.
to try to like pin on anyone in a contract.
Gotcha. So we've got excerpts from a Law Review article called Kenford v. Erie County, Contract Damages and Foreseeability,
Catchy title.
plus a legal brief and a standard case brief.
Oh, nice. A few different perspectives.
Yeah, so think of this as your crash course on Kenford.
Totally. Yeah. Think of it as a cautionary tale for lawyers
Right.
and anyone who, negotiates deals.
Okay, so let's set the scene. It's Buffalo in the 1960s, and the city's buzzing with this idea of getting a brand new domed stadium.
Oh, wow. Back in the 60s, that's a
Yeah,
big deal.
big time. Now enter the Kenford Company. This company with options on land right near where the stadium was supposed to be built, they saw an opportunity, a chance to really profit from the stadium's success.
Smart.
So,
Yeah, and that's a key point here.
okay.
Kenford wasn't just like offering up land, out of the goodness of their hearts.
Yeah, right.
They were in it to win it,
Yeah.
hoping to develop the area around the stadium and capitalize on that increased value.
Totally. So, what did the deal look like? What were the terms that they agreed on?
Well, the agreement had like three main parts. Kenford would donate 178 acres for the stadium.
Wow, that's a lot of land.
Yeah, Erie County was supposed to start building within a year,
Okay.
and then they'd negotiate a 40-year lease with Kenford's affiliate,
Okay.
Dome Stadium Inc., or DSI,
Gotcha.
to operate the stadium.
That's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, so far so good, right?
But I have a feeling there's a twist coming.
Oh, there is.
Yeah.
And this is where things start to unravel.
Yeah.
The county ran into some problems getting funding,
Uh-oh.
and by 1971, the whole stadium project just collapsed.
Oh, wow. So no stadium, no influx of all those fans and all that revenue. Kenford is just left holding the bag.
Exactly. They had donated all that land,
Right.
based their whole business plan around the stadium being there, and all of a sudden it was gone.
Wow.
Imagine the frustration.
I bet they weren't too happy about that.
No, not at all.
What did Kenford do?
Well, naturally, they took Erie County to court.
Makes sense.
And initially, things actually looked pretty good for Kenford.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they won millions in damages for the lost land value.
Wow. Okay.
But then the appeals court stepped in and said, hold on, you
Oh.
can't get like a separate award for lost profits on top of that.
Oh, interesting. So they got compensated for the land itself, but not for the potential profits they would have made. Why is that?
Well, the appeals court ruled that those lost profits were just way too speculative.
Oh.
Like the stadium wasn't even built.
Right.
So how could they be certain about how much Kenford would have actually made? It's
Yeah.
like trying to claim damages based on winning the lottery, you know?
Right,
It's
yeah.
just not concrete enough.
I see, that makes sense, but I'm guessing this isn't where the story ends.
Oh, this is just the beginning.
Oh boy.
It gets even more interesting, even a bit,
Fuck.
legal nerdy.
I like legal nerdy.
All right, so enter Hadley v. Baxendale,
Okay.
a landmark case from way back in 1854.
Wow.
It basically set the standard for what we call foreseeability in contract damages.
Okay, break that down for me. What does foreseeability mean in this context?
So essentially means you can only recover damages for losses that were, reasonably foreseeable
Okay.
at the time the contract was made.
Right.
Think of it like this.
Okay.
If I hire you to deliver a package
Yeah.
and you're late,
Oh.
I can claim damages for the foreseeable consequences of that delay,
Yeah.
like a missed business opportunity if I told you about it up front.
Okay. Yeah.
But I can't claim damages for something totally unexpected,
Okay.
like a meteor strike that happened because I was late for a meeting
Right.
due to the package delay.
Wow. Okay. So you're saying it has to be something both parties could reasonably anticipate, when they sign the contract. Yeah.
And the court in the Kenford case used Hadley v. Baxendale as the foundation for its decision.
Interesting.
So the question was whether or not Erie County could have reasonably foreseen that Kenford would lose out on all that potential land value.
Right.
If the stadium project fell through.
So that becomes like the central issue, right?
Yeah.
Was it foreseeable or not?
That's the million-dollar question.
What did the highest court in New York, the Court of Appeals, have to say about this?
Well, the Court of Appeals ultimately sided against Kenford.
Oh, wow.
And they laid out their reasoning in like four key points.
Okay, lay on me.
First, there was nothing in the contract itself that explicitly stated Erie County would be responsible for any, like, increase in Kenford's land value.
So basically, if it's not in writing, you can't assume it's part of the deal, right?
That's one way to put it.
Yeah.
But the course message is clear.
Mm-hmm.
Be super explicit in your contracts.
Right.
Don't leave any room for assumptions or vague interpretations.
Yeah.
If a specific consequence or liability is important to you,
right,
spell it out, you know, in black and white.
Makes sense. So what were the other reasons the Court of Appeals sided with Erie County?
Okay, so the second reason was what they called the circular logic problem. Okay, the circular logic problem.
Kenford's entire claim rested on the idea that the stadium would be built and be successful.
Right.
But if the stadium wasn't built,
right,
there wouldn't be any profits to lose.
Ah, so their claim of lost profits relied on something that never actually happened.
Exactly.
Seems kind of circular.
It does, right.
Yeah.
It highlights the importance of considering those alternative scenarios and potential downsides when you're drafting a contract.
Right.
What happens if the project just totally fails?
Yeah.
Are there mechanisms in place to, like, address those losses?
Right. Good point. Okay, so that's two reasons down.
Okay.
What about the other two?
All right, so the third reason the court highlighted was that Kenford still retained development rights to the land surrounding the stadium.
Okay.
So even though the stadium project fell apart, they weren't completely stuck. They still had options.
So the court was basically saying, hey, you still have some flexibility here. It's not a total loss.
Right, exactly. And then that final reason focused on the timing of Kenford's projections.
Okay.
Their estimates for, like, how much their land value would increase were based on, you know, market speculation that happened after the contract was signed.
Oh, so after the fact.
Yeah. And the court said you can't hold someone responsible for future market fluctuations that weren't predictable when they made the deal.
That's interesting. So it's not just about whether something is foreseeable in general.
Right.
But whether it was foreseeable at the specific time the contract was made.
You got it.
Okay, so we've unpacked those four key reasons behind the Court of Appeals decision.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to step back for a moment.
Okay.
And think about the bigger picture here.
All right.
What can we learn from Kenford's experience?
Yeah.
What are the practical takeaways here for lawyers and anyone else?
Right.
You know, dealing with these complex contracts.
Well, the Kenford case is a bit like a masterclass in what not to do when drafting contracts. It highlights several pitfalls to avoid.
Okay, let's dive into those.
Okay.
What are some, like, key lessons we can glean from Kenford's mistakes?
Well, the court's reasoning actually offers some valuable insights into how to, like, draft contracts that are more robust and less prone to these kinds of disputes.
Okay, that would be good.
They highlight three key areas to focus on.
Right. I'm all ears.
The first is what we can call damage blueprinting.
Damage blueprinting.
Yeah, okay.
If you anticipate specific types of consequential damages that might, you know, arise if the deal goes south.
Right.
You got to spell those out clearly in the contract.
Yeah.
Think of it like a defined terms section.
Okay.
Where you're laying out exactly what each party is responsible for
mm-hmm.
if things go wrong.
So instead of just hoping the other side understands what you're thinking.
Yeah.
You're putting it all in black and white. You're defining those potential damages up front.
Right.
Gotcha.
And the second point kind of builds on that.
It's all about creating risk flow charts.
Okay. Risk flow charts.
Map out different if-then scenarios for how the project could, you know, fail and what the consequences would be for each party.
Right.
This forces everyone to think through those potential downsides and agree on how to handle them.
That sounds super helpful. It's like having a plan B and a plan C.
Right.
Just in case things go off the rails.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Anticipate the unexpected and build those contingencies into the contract.
Right.
And then the third point is particularly interesting.
Okay, hit me.
The court emphasized the importance of what they call consideration archaeology.
Consideration archaeology.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty intense. What exactly does that entail?
What's a fancy way of saying that you should, you know, use the contract's recitals
Oh, okay.
to document what each party is not promising?
Oh, interesting.
So in the Kenford case, if they'd included a statement like, the commentary acknowledges that the donor is relying on, you know, increased land value around the stadium.
Right.
It might have strengthened their position.
So you're basically saying don't just focus on what you're getting.
Right.
Also be clear about what you're not responsible for.
Exactly. It's about setting those boundaries
yeah.
and managing expectations right from the start.
Right.
This helps to, you know, minimize the risk of misunderstandings and disputes later on.
That's a really interesting point. It's like preemptively addressing potential arguments before they even come up.
Exactly.
Okay, so we've got our blueprints, our flow charts, and our archaeological digs.
I like it.
All in the name of crafting a solid, you know, well-protected contract.
Right.
But before we wrap up, I want to throw a hypothetical out there just to test these ideas out, you know.
All right, shoot.
Let's say Kenford had been a bit more savvy.
Okay.
And included a clause that said, hey, if this stadium deal falls through, the county has to buy our adjacent land
mm-hmm.
at the price it was before all the stadium hype. Would that have changed things?
You're thinking like a true contract strategist.
Thanks.
And yes, I think that would have likely changed the outcome significantly.
Really?
Yeah. By including that clause, Kenford would have created a specific mechanism
okay.
for addressing that potential loss in land value.
Right.
It wouldn't have been left up to speculation or interpretation.
So they're essentially guaranteeing themselves a buyer.
Right.
Regardless of whether the stadium's built or not.
Exactly.
They're turning that potential loss into a sure thing.
It's a smart move.
That's a really insightful point.
Yeah.
It shows how, like, a carefully crafted clause
mm-hmm.
can really shift that balance of risk, you know,
right.
and protect your interests in case things go south.
It's all about thinking ahead
yeah.
and anticipating those potential pitfalls.
This whole case has been a fascinating deep dive into, you know, the intricacies of contract law.
It really has.
But for someone who's not a lawyer,
right.
why should they care about this?
Yeah.
What's the takeaway for the average person?
Well, I think the Kenford case, while complex,
mm-hmm.
underscores a really fundamental principle that applies to all of us.
Okay, what's that?
Clarity is king.
Clarity is king.
Whether you're signing a lease,
mm-hmm.
entering a business partnership,
yeah.
or even just making a simple agreement with someone,
right.
make sure everyone understands the terms,
yeah.
the expectations, the potential consequences.
Right.
Don't leave things open to chance.
So it's not just about avoiding legal battles.
Right.
It's about like fostering clear communication
yeah.
and building strong relationships.
Absolutely.
Right.
And remember, contracts are tools. When used correctly,
yeah.
they can help facilitate smooth transactions,
right.
minimize the risk of disputes.
Totally.
But when they're poorly drafted or riddled with ambiguities,
uh-oh.
They can lead to, you know, costly and time-consuming legal battles.
Well said. And on that note, I think it's time for us to wrap up this deep dive. But before we go, I want to leave you, the listener, with a final thought.
Okay.
As you navigate your own agreements, think about the lessons we've learned from the Kenford case.
Mm.
Be explicit, be thorough,
yeah.
and don't be afraid to seek legal counsel
right.
if you're unsure about something.
Good advice.
Remember, a well-crafted contract can be a really powerful tool.
For sure.
For protecting your interest
mm-hmm.
and ensuring a fair outcome for everyone involved.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
And always remember,
yeah.
there's always more to learn.
That's the truth.
Keep exploring, keep questioning,
mm-hmm.
and keep diving deep into this fascinating world of contract law.
Absolutely. Until next time.